Guys, welcome to The Pulse. We're back to do it again like we do every week, talking about the people who are doing things. They're touring, they're making differences, they're sharing their lives with us. And today's guests all over TV and the comedy circuit and a podcast, and started off before the recording started already taking shots at me.
I didn't take a shot. I said, I'm sorry about your Super Bowl loss. That's what I said. I said, but you got your money this year. You got your bag. Good luck next year. That's what I said. I didn't disrespect you. I just wanted to say it's hard to get to the Super Bowl, and you did it, man.
Hater. Donnell Rawlings.
That's not a hater. That's a congratulator. A lot of people, you know how many kids on the playground in the Little League wish to get to a position where they could quarterback a team and then quarterback a news show? Like, you multitasking, bro.
Now we're going to have to put up on the screen the picture of me and Jalen Hurts with the side-by-side so people can tweet us and see the comparison. Welcome to The Pulse.
Thanks for having me, man.
I appreciate you. That's how we're going to start.
And Jalen, you look good with a tie, man. I'm used to seeing you with shoulder pads and stuff, but you look good with a tie, man.
I wish I had his check, man. The negotiation that's about to happen.
Yeah, and the choice of color, is that powder blue? That is not gangster, but is it powder blue? I'm just saying, I mess with BMF, and I've never seen anybody from BMF wear powder blue. But go ahead. I mean, not to disrespect your gangster. We know what it is.
You got to coordinate, man. Like,
yeah,
doing what I got to do. All right, so we're jumping right into this. Let's start. I was reading a little bit about your background. I mean, you've been doing this for a minute. How'd you get into comedy? What was your first start?
My start was, I never thought about doing stand-up. And when I was in D.C., I was waiting to be a D.C. police officer, and I used to work security for this grocery chain called Safeway. And as a guy, a friend of mine, he used to work for Hostess in the daytime. He was a comedian at night, and he would come to the store and give away free tickets. So myself and a lot of people that I worked with, we started going to this open mic, and I became a heckler. I was just destroying, roasting professional comedians of like 4 or 5 years. And people started coming to hear me roast. The owner wanted me to shut up. They dared me to go on stage. And 30 years later, I never looked back. And most people in this business, like when I was a kid, I knew I was going to be a comedian. I never thought I would do stand-up, but everything just happened.
So you were calling out the comedians on the stage from the audience, and that became your show. Like, people were coming to see you.
I mean, I started drawing a crowd, and I was so excited about being a heckler. I went to the club owner and said, listen, you see, I've increased your business by 30%. Now it's time to talk about a door deal. I was trying to get a door deal. I wasn't an open micer. I wasn't a comedian. But I knew that I had increased the business there. And that's some kind of a funny story. They look back and say, you're the first person in comedy to try to get a door deal without even performing on stage. So I was in my entrepreneur mindset back then.
I feel like that's on the comedians who were on stage, because I can't imagine somebody making a career out of trying to insult you from the audience.
I mean, I didn't make a career. I mean, I was good. I mean, the pros used to come up to me and be like, yo, I'm trying to work on some material. Could you please leave me alone? Like, they was like intimidated, because I used to shut it down. But when I got into it, I started doing it for myself. I kind of felt bad, because I know how much pressure it is to try to engage your audience and keep them laughing. And to be distracted by anything. I mean, I was like, oh, man. But that was my past and in my future. I was like, if a heckler comes at me, it's going to be two things going to happen. You're going to either offer me a drink or you're going to want to fight. That's the only thing, because I'm ruthless. When I go in, I'm ruthless. I mean, I've seen people at news desks loosen up their ties and decide that they want to wear different colored shirts messing with me, bro. You know, congratulations on getting to the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh. So that feels like a warning. Like, I need to leave you alone and conduct the interview. We don't want to go down that path, right?
I know you got it in you, because when I went at you, you said, oh, this is what we're doing? Like, you rolled your sleeves up too. So I'm not going to disrespect your skills.
Listen, I learned a lesson as a child. Quick story. My father used to work in radio. And the radio station did a comedy routine. They sponsored a comedy routine. And Eddie Murphy was there. And it was his time was up. And so they were sending people to try to get him off the stage.
Oh, wow. Right.
And you can imagine how that went. He went in on my dad, went in on the crowd, on security. I'm sitting there as a kid like, oh, man.
Yo, you got an Eddie Murphy story. Mine is worse. My father used to date this chick. And then they went to New York on a trip. And this was like Eddie Murphy Raw days and everything. And Eddie Murphy stole one of my father's chicks back in the day. So he hated Eddie Murphy.
All right, so we all got our stories. Man, yeah. It has been, you know about the comedy career, my first experience, I think my first experience, so I go back to The Wire, back to The Chappelle Show. You know, when you got into this early on, do you ever think you'd be sitting back talking about a 30-year successful career?
No, but I knew that I would be talking about it. I didn't know what level of success I would reach. You know, me, when I first started, you know, a lot of people that come into it, they want to be rich. They want to be famous and everything. And when I first started, my first focus was, I said, I wanted to be good. And I realized if I'm good at it, eventually all those other things will start to pay off. But never did I ever think that this would be something that I would be doing for the rest of my life. But the minute I hit the stage, I knew it was what I was going to be doing for the rest of my life. And I never looked back, never gave myself a plan B, never made any excuses. And until this day, I've got a certain level of success, but you know, I really love the fact that every year I figure out a different way to go to the next level, or how to be funnier, or do something with my show or even my life to keep challenging myself and go to the next level. And after 30 years, I still have fun, and I'm always trying to figure out how can I do better and how can I be better. And this is coming from somebody that's pretty good at it, but I always got to try to dig deep to figure out, Donnell, what can you do to take it to the next level and to be motivated about it.
You seem like you're having fun though. So that comes through when going at people and going back and forth. You just seem like you're enjoying this. So I'd imagine you couldn't work this hard if you didn't still love it.
I know some people work, they work as hard of it, but they not passionate about what it is. You know, some people, they work hard because they built their brand and their name up to a certain point where when you put their name on the marquee, they can make hundreds of thousands of dollars. That doesn't mean that they still passionate about being good. You know, I won't say any names, but there's guys out here that people have been watching for years, won't change their routine, won't do anything different. And I call them guys that just do money grabs. You know what I'm saying? Like you could be successful in this and not enjoy it. But I can honestly say, I still enjoy it.
And continuing to evolve, as you said, and continue to find new things. So is it fun, or does it get to the point where you go in on people when they're still pulling out the Ashy Larry?
I mean, it's just fun. I mean, people like, oh, you get sick of people calling you that. In this business, it's so hard for people to remember you from anything. So the fact that, you know, you associate me with an iconic character and that made television history, you know, I don't get mad at that. You know, I embrace it, and I realize, like, you know, you people know you from one thing until you do the next thing. And then when you do the next thing, they'll know you from that, and they'll continue to know you. But, you know, I have fun with it. And, I play with people. I roast. But I'm never, like, with any ill will or maliciously trying to, like, ruin you or ruin your day. It's just all in the fun. And I keep a smile on my face. And people playful with it, you know?
It is. When I talk to the different comedians, because, again, I mentioned to you, I talked to Michael Blackson. Monique was on the show. Jeff Ross was just here. And we had people coming through. I don't think people realize, I didn't realize, how much y'all grind. Like, even the successful people on TV shows and Chappelle Show, and you're on BMF. Like, are you still, you're touring, what, 100 nights a year? Like, you're always on the road.
I'm always, but for me, like, if you look at my career, I never had nobody at work in acting that could sustain a lifestyle. It's always been, okay, you got a guest spot here. You know what I mean? You got a guest spot here. But I've never been of, like, the series regulars on, let's say, like, Black-ish or anything. I never made that money. My money is, like, it's on the streets. It is the grind. And it's one of the reasons why I don't some people, you hear about cancel culture. But it's hard to cancel somebody that's accepted by their peers. You know, you got a fan base. You know what I mean? It's always willing to be like, oh, I'll put my money to go see them. And as much as I do love it, but it's the only way I can create right now. It's the only way I can create a lifestyle for myself. I got to go out on the road, and I got to go get it. And I love what I do, too. So it's like a combination of both. I sometimes the road gets a little grueling because, you know, it's less time I get to spend with my son. you know, but also know that I got to make sacrifices now to better his future and do what's going to be best for him. But I've figured out a way to have a balance of both of them. And again, I really enjoy doing what I do. And I wake up in the morning and I'm like, okay, first of all, the best thing about waking up in the morning is you woke up in the morning.
Yeah.
Right. And then after you do that, I was like, this, what do you got to do today? And I'm like, I can do whatever I want today. I call my own shots. I make my own schedule. And that's something I'll never take for granted.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned your son, and I'm having fun in the discussion, but your son's on your social media. You talk about your son whenever you get a chance. You put out there how important your son is to you and the sacrifices you make to spend that time. Why? Yeah. Why are you so visible about the relationship with your son?
Because my father, the relationship I had with my dad, and I love my dad. He passed away 4 years ago. You know, he was a guy of the streets, had a lot of girlfriends and everything. He had a lot of kids. And he chose a lifestyle that probably wouldn't give him the opportunity to spend all the quality time with his kids, either that or being incarcerated. And I, like, to this day, I probably got 10, like, really solid memories of things that I've done or experienced with my father. And I said, me having a kid, especially later in life, I said, this dude is just going to be an overflow of memories, you know? And I mean, my thing is like giving him, creating opportunities to make memories for a lifetime with him. And then some people are like, well, and I think it's good for other dads to see that bond that a guy has with his kid. Cause some people are in crazy situations where they're not in their kid, which I can't stand. Somebody to have a kid and not in their kid's life. And I think, you know, you see my Instagram and see how I rock. It might inspire some other dads to like want to be more involved and understand the importance of creating those memories with those kids. And I posted things sometimes that people are like, yeah, man, but it must be nice having money being able to do this. And I say, it ain't about the money. It's about the time. Like two of my son's favorite activities don't cost nothing. One of them is going to a car wash. That's $10. And then the other one is going to the gas station. That's a tank of gas. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It's not about what you can afford. It's can you afford to make those connections? Take your kid on a walk in the park, just sitting there throwing a football. It's simple stuff, you know, that you can do to make those memories.
And I like the fact, I wanted to talk about that, and I appreciate you sharing it because I think that message is important. And I do think that people need to see it. I saw it on your social and went, oh, okay. Ashley Larry's a good dad.
And then I ain't trying to, like, Not only that, but you hear, like, the stories that's always promoted, especially with a lot of black dads and black families, like, y'all ain't ish. You know what I'm saying? You ain't, or you. So if you're going to promote that, why not promote the ones? And I know there's a lot of people around me that are dope dads, and they don't get the credit that they deserve. And it's like, you could also say, you don't need no credit for being a good dad. You should just be a good dad. Okay, but if you're going to dog all these people out all the time, right, you want to highlight the deadbeats, then highlight the ones that's give it the same amount of time and give it the same platform.
Agreed. Give it the same energy. All right, so, and we're going to talk about, you're coming to Philly, you're on tour, we're going to get into the specifics of that, but you're doing a lot of things. So walk us through, so you're on BMF.
Right.
What's that been like?
It's been great. It was like, I'd always tell people, I'm not an actor. I'm a comedian that gets to play acting every once in a while. For the most part, anything that I get, whether it be film or TV, it's because somebody was a huge fan. I worked with them before, but put me in an audition room. I just don't nail it. And I was on season one. My friend Tasha Smith, who directed a lot of the episodes last year and who's a power player in this business, she just called me one day. I was like, yo, I got this. But she used some choice words to describe me, okay. Right? But it was all like brother, sister love, right? And she's like, I got this role for you, blah, 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 blah. She had spoke with 50 about it, Randy Huggins, and another one of the second producers. And I was in a season finale last year. Randy Huggins, who is the showrunner, co-creator, and a lot of these stories come from his brain. He fell in love with the character. In season two, they gave me, started as three episodes, and then they just kept adding episodes to where I think I was in 9 out of the 10 episodes. And it was fun. I'll save it for the show. I really want to talk about it in depth at my show, about my relationship with that character and my relationship with real life.
Okay.
Because I know a lot of people like, just why you let him talk to you like that? You can't let Lamar just talk to you like that, right? But I got a response. You come to the show, I got a response. I'm going to answer all of those BMF questions. But that, again, whenever I work, I've been lucky enough to be a part of something that's pops in pop culture that's just hot. HBO's The Corner was hot. The Wire was hot.
Yeah.
The Chappelle Show was hot. I've always been able to get these little gigs, whether I'm in there for one or two scenes, be it doing something that's a part of history. And the streets have spoken, and they really, really love BMF.
Yeah.
They love it.
They're taking it seriously. They're taking your role seriously.
Yo, the next person that's talking about, I just came home. I'm like, I didn't even know you was gone, bro. I'm not in BMF for real. I play a character on TV. But it's been a fun ride to be able to, because for so long, like, everybody referenced, like, Ashley Larry, but to go out and people like, yo, you be on that show. And I'm like, what, Chappelle Show? And they're like, BMF. It feels good knowing that I was part of another body of work that people connect with.
You got BMF. You've got several different shows. You got a podcast now that has gotten to the point where it's millions of people checking out your podcast.
Well, I don't know about millions. I would say thousands or hundreds. I've been on a hiatus. The one thing about it, when I talked to Joe Rogan about doing this, when I first started, got into the podcast world, he said the number one thing is the consistency of it. And, like, I tip my hat off to those guys that can, like, okay, I'm doing this every Tuesday. I'm committed to this. I travel a lot. I haven't done it, like, in 3 months, but I know that I'm going to dive back into it because a lot of people really miss me being unfiltered, unedited, and just getting Donnell, like, just straight up. So it's called the Donnell Rawlins Show. If you listen, you can subscribe to it. And I'll say within the month or so, I'm going to revisit it and come back stronger and try to do something a little different from just the normal, like, studio podcast.
All right, so we'll get back into that. All right, in Philly, you're on tour, but Philly, the 6th, 7th, and 8th of April. What are people going to get when they come see your show at Helium here in Philadelphia?
Well, if you've been following me, I've been doing this club for years. If you've been following my career as a stand-up, and I know some people that just got introduced to me, but if you've been following me as a stand-up, you know, pound for pound, I'm one of the funny guys to perform. And I'm not saying it in a cocky way. I took a lot of pride in it. I'm not that prideful when it comes to acting. I hardly ever know what I'm doing in that. But stand-up, it's like, if you see my show before, you know when I come back around, it's always something different. You're going to get the same energy. You're going to get somebody that doesn't subscribe to cancel culture. I'm not going to be like crazy about anything, but you just get like some real comedy, and it's a feel-good vibe. You're going to get a feel-good vibe. I talk about topical stuff, current events. A lot of things I talk about now are reflective of my life, being an older dad, you know what I'm saying? The struggles of co-parenting, you know, being in this business, dealing with mental health, which, you know, Black people, you know, for Black people, we didn't know nothing about mental health. Just people started yelling out these words, gaslighting and stuff. You know, what Black people say, you, how you feeling? You depressed? No, I'm a little effed up right now. I'll be all right. You know what I mean? Like, we don't know what's going on, but I touch on that. And it's like it's a nice, well-rounded show. And I also like to keep myself open to engage the audience where maybe something special happens away from what I had planned.
So people, and the don't heckle you from the crowd. You
got to pick your poison. That's what you want to do. I'm just telling you, I don't stop. You know what I mean? Like, I remember one time, my mother came to one of my shows, and this guy tried to heckle me, and I went on this dude so hard. My mother jumped out of her seat, grabbed me, and said, "Leave him alone, baby. Stop it. Stop it." She said, "Stop it. Enough is enough." I was like, "Let me go, Mom." She was like, "Enough is enough."
Look, you got to learn. You got to learn. Yeah, like, don't start it if you're not prepared.
But then after a while, usually, like, hecklers, when you first start, you don't really, like, have stage presence. You don't really have a lot of jokes. People come at you. But I think I'm at the point now, like, people that come and see me, it's not like, guess who I saw at Comedy Night? The ticket says Donnell Rawlins. So, right. It's not too often that people come in that want to ruin the show. They want to be a part of it, but not to ruin it.
Yeah, you mentioned cancel culture, and I'm curious. I've asked all of the comedians, entertainers, performers who have come on the show, because you obviously worked with Dave Chappelle. Comedians in general seem to be a kind of a tight-knit group, but you've seen the people who are taking their gripe onto the stage. Like, things have gotten physical in certain circumstances. What? How do you respond to that? Does it, is that something you think about?
I fight back.
Okay.
No, I would just say, I mean, I'm just keeping it real. That is nothing new. It's just that now people have phones and record these incidents. People being aggressive and trying to rush the stage has been going on for years. And I've had incidents like that, and each and every one of them, it did not end well for the person that thought it was cool to just jump on stage. I'll just put it like that. I'm not encouraging any violence or whatever, but I'm not going to button my jacket up and be like, wow, I will retaliate, you know.
So nobody's going to be slapping you while you're hosting events?
No, and I'm like I said, it's so many stories of incidents like that, especially coming up in my circuit. I came up on the Chitlin circuit. It was the go-hard spots. It was like comedy nights. And a lot of those crowds was rough. There's always going to be somebody to try to play you. But, you know, again, back in the day, there was no way. You only heard these stories. But now it's like it's recorded. You're going to be on World Star, whatever. But I don't even want to, you know, promote that or give people an idea that that's normal, you know, but I can't be responsible on how I react to you trying to physically hurt me.
Couple more, and we want to again have up on the screen so people can get tickets to the Helium Club on Sansom Street here in Philadelphia. Check out Donnell Rawlings. But I saw a clip that was interesting to me when you were talking about Dave Chappelle.
You know, I know you're serious about your questions.
Right.
Whenever a black man takes their hand and put it like that, like you just did,
right?
They try to bring home a point, man. That is like, okay, and you say that. That is a very arrogant finger stance you got there, bro.
Go ahead. You know what you just called me out on? That was my smooth way of looking down at my notepad that's right here.
I'm sorry.
Table.
I'm sorry. I see it.
I didn't want everybody to know I had questions written down on the table.
You got questions, I got answers. It's all good.
All right, I'm not going to do that. So,
no problem.
Into the next question.
My hands really are ashy.
A little bit.
Whoa! All right. What were you saying?
I saw you talking about Dave Chappelle's testing moment and how people have testing moments where you kind of find out what they're all about. I didn't have the context of the question, but that was interesting to me.
But it was Muhammad Ali, because people, you know, like me, I think I'm a great comic, you know, but me being aligned with Dave, I still get the question, like, is he the GOAT, you know? Mm-hmm. And as a very competitive comic, you probably say to yourself sometimes, well, it's been nights that I've been funny or whatever, right? It's been nights that I've thought I've had a different performance. But it's not too often that a person, and it's in a lot of things, like have a Muhammad Ali moment. And what I mean by that is a moment where, you know, you have to stand for something. You know what I mean? Like, you got your integrity, you got your morals, your beliefs, and it's a possibility that what you stand for may cause you financial pain, physical pain. It could cost you something, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's one of the reasons why people really got super connected with Dave. Because he had a moment in his career where he had to stand for something. A lot of people thought it was like nuts. Why would you walk away from that amount of money? And people that never seen that amount of money or had those conversations, they don't understand it. The average person's working a 9-to-5, like, how could you walk away from 50 mil? Well, if you experience money, you can walk away from 50 mil if you know somebody's making 300 or half a bill off of that. And that's a situation of knowing what your worth is. And I think that that's one of the things that separate Muhammad Ali from Mike Tyson. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think that's what separates like a Kevin Hart from Dave Chappelle. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Kevin Hart is very respected in his business for funny, but more so his work ethics and being able to position himself to be a comedian rock star. But do we know of Kevin having a testing moment where he might just say, F everything, I'm doing it this way? Not to take away from it, because I've seen Kevin's grind from driving to New York to do a $50 room, you know what I mean, to drive back to Philly, you know what I mean? Okay. But has he had that Muhammad Ali moment like Dave? And I can say No, it doesn't take away from either one of them. But it's like, in the case of Dave, it's like people that really like ride with him for his ethics and his morals.
So you never really find out ultimately what somebody's willing to sacrifice till they're put in the position where they have to stand for something. So those people who haven't had those testing moments didn't necessarily fail the test. They just haven't had
it. No, they just haven't. They just haven't had that moment. Be like this, oh my God, you know what I'm saying? They just haven't had that moment. And again, it doesn't take away from the success or what they contribute to whatever their field is. But, you know, those are the moments that get magnified and a large scale of people see it and they connect with it.
Do you think more people, two more questions, and then we'll go ahead and wrap up. Do you think more people are recognizing their value? I mean, you talked about Dave Chappelle, Monique. Other people have kind of stood up and said, you know, no.
Yeah, and it's because of people like Dave. It's people like Monique. It's people that, like, say, you know, I know what my value is. And it's kind of hard for other people to digest because all we see is, like, who going to pass up on that money? You know what I'm saying? Like, we see the money part of it, but certain people, and those two people are perfect examples of it, like, they don't care. And they paved the way for people to be like, you know what? I do know what my value is. You know, and I even look at it like, I see, like, I'm starting to see one thing I like in a podcast game. I love the fact that it was like a lot of people that have been through it, have the stories, been able to find a way to make money. This is like, I don't know if it's off topic, but in hip-hop. Hip-hop is not age-friendly for people. They can't wait to call you old head or whatever. And like, we don't support like going to see like Fish, Grateful Dead, you know what I'm saying? Going to see Bruce Springsteen until he's like 90 years old. And I like the idea of the podcast joint giving some of our people, the pioneers and some of the legends, a platform to share knowledge and listen to those stories, you know, and that adds value to it. I like, I love being able to take a journey with somebody. Even in my case, man, I've been doing it for 30 years, right? And I did a show in Baltimore last week, and I saw people that was there the first week I've ever did comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, I seen them go through like that's 3 decades, you know, of continuing to follow me. And it makes me feel good when I go to a show and I see somebody that remembered like the first year I did it, and then they're out with their kids.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Their kids like 22, 23, and in some cases like 30. You know what I mean? I'm an old head. But I asked myself, I was like, and I, like Donnell, after 30 years, I came up during the Def Jam era. And if you look at the success stories out of Def Jam, it's a handful of them. You got some, but it's so many people. If one, not here anymore, or just could not continue it. You know, couldn't sustain it, couldn't figure out a way to make it their livelihood for that time. So, again, I'm always grateful, feel blessed that I'm doing what I want to do after 30 years.
Had a couple of the guys from New Edition who said the Candy Girls are now grandmoms bringing their grandkids to go see New Edition again.
And I tell you, I hated New Edition. They had all the girls, man. I remember my dad did a show at the Washington Coliseum years ago. It was Rare Essence EU, and he had New Edition when they was off can, when Bobby Brown could move.
Right.
You know, they was like, they was doing it back in the day. But I mean, again, you know, these youngins, they talk a lot of trash or whatever, but let's try. Talk to me. If you're still doing this 30 years from now, you know what I mean?
We and Ronnie said that. Ron DeVoe actually said that men, young guys, hated New Edition because all the women in the crowd were paying attention to New Edition. We're standing against the wall like, man, I'm like, I care about you.
Yeah, that's like Prince. Prince was like that too. Prince did that too.
We
hated Prince.
We end the Pulse with a concept called use your voice for good. It means different things to different people. But that's how we like to end the show. When you hear use your voice for good, what's it mean to you?
Make people laugh. Make people feel good. Use my voice for an escape. You know what I'm saying? Like Dave says, I always remember, he said, it's our job as comedians to make fun of the things that are troubling the world. So I want to use my voice to make people feel better in trying times of needs and time when you really need an escape. That's what I'm going to use my voice for.
Appreciate you.
I'm in and out of state trying to move this weight. At least you could wish me luck. That's my song, that 50 Cent. I mean, you ain't got to get in the car with me, bro, but at least you could wish me luck. Just say good luck.
The 6th, 7th, and 8th at Helium here in Philadelphia. Also continuing the tour, so we will put the rest of the dates up for our national audience to check you out as well. I appreciate you, man. Appreciate you taking this
time. I got to end this with this, and your producer can do whatever he wants to do with it, but I got to end by saying, I'm rich, bitch!
Appreciate you, man.
Thank you for your time, Jalen. Good luck this season.
You have a good one. We'll talk soon. Oh, man.
Peace, brother. Thank you.
Appreciate you, but thank you very much.
Have a good one.
Take care. You too. Guys, thanks so much for listening to The Pulse podcast today with comedian, actor, entertainer, Donnell Rawlings, who is doing a lot of big things. These guys, comedians are always on the grind. I appreciate him sharing information, both about all of the funny stuff, the Ashy Larry, the Chappelle Show, his role on BMF, but also about some of the more serious and inspirational things, like his relationship with his son and why it matters to put that out there in the public eye so people can see that relationship. I always enjoy getting to know more about the guests that we have on the show, and that was something that I certainly enjoyed hearing about him. If you are interested in subscribing to The Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast, which I'm guessing you are because you're listening, just hit the subscribe button and you will get a notification every Monday when a new episode comes out. I also encourage you to hit up YouTube. There are some really good guests of the show over the last little over a year that I think you will enjoy if you just go search The Pulse with Bill Anderson on YouTube. Also, hit me up on social media at BillAFox29 on most platforms, Bill Anderson Fox29 on Facebook. And I guess that's about it. Thank you. And I leave you as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.